Okay, let's take our Bibles and go to Philippians 4. I want to just continue some thoughts there from Philippians 4 and looking at proper thinking tonight and how that's an influence upon our increasing peace and not anxiety. It's important for us to understand that God gives us direction on how to have a calm and restful spirit. And as we see here in this passage, there is a supernatural element to that. This peace that passeth understanding, and Jesus said in John 14:27, "Peace I leave with you, my peace I give unto you, not as the world giveth, give I unto you. Let not your heart be troubled, neither let it be afraid." And so Jesus said, hey, I give you something the world can't provide. I provide this, that is, as Paul says here, under the inspiration of God's Spirit, that passeth understanding. And so we looked at that in detail earlier. And so there are times when you and I face things that seem to be crushing in upon us. We feel like there's nowhere to go. There's no way to catch our breath. There's no way to go any further. And it feels like we can't get out. And we feel like everything's closing in on us. There's a little bit of panic, a lot of anxiety and fears get in there. And so I think at those times we need to do what Jesus said, "Come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest." Sometimes that coming to him is filled with tears. Sometimes coming to him means that you skip a meal and just say, "I got to seek God," because God does have an answer. God does take care of us. And I may step on a few toes here, and it's not the purpose for this, but it may be more for information, but the world tells us something a lot different. The world today tells us, "I got a pill for you. It'll calm you. I got peace for you. It's in something that you can swallow." And I think we're getting to a place in America where, you know, there's no, all it says, "You sound like you got trouble, so here, let me give you this." And hey, wow, that helps. I feel calm. And we never seek God, and so we trust in a little pill. And so I'm just saying we need to be careful. I know that most of you probably heard this, that you know, that little pill resets a chemical imbalance in our brain. And just some things that I've been reading of late, this is very interesting, that there is still no test that determines precisely the imbalance in your brain, if there is one. They don't tell you that there are side effects that can be worse than the problem. They don't tell you that 90% of your serotonin is not in your head, it's in your stomach. And 50% of dopamine, which those two things are what they often looked at, that those are in your digestive tract. They don't tell you coming off psychiatric medications is harder than coming off hardcore drugs. But they will tell you that, hey, this will bring you peace. This will calm your spirit. Trust in this little pill. And so I'm just saying, be careful. Jesus still is the answer. Trust in the Lord, and that's where you find peace. And so, I you know, if someone's on those medications, I would never tell you to come off them, okay? I would say, and I've dealt with a few people this way, I would say, you know what, you need to first of all know how to deal with life from a biblical perspective. And if you don't have that down consistently every time, then you don't come off those things. Because you're just going to go back on, and there's a whole, and if someone said, "Hey, Pastor, I'd really like to come off that kind of stuff because I really want to begin to trust the Lord," and you are trusting, I'm not saying you're not, but there are some other things you need to check out, some other health issues, and check those out. And if you were coming off, don't come off them without a medical professional helping you, and come off on very small increments. I was reading something less recently that talked about coming off them is probably down to 1/1000th of a milligram, or I think it is, per time. And it can take years for someone to come off those because of how they affect the body physically and mentally. And so anyway, I felt like I needed to share that with you. And some of you may have lots of questions from that. But boy, there is some stuff going on in our nation today with psychiatric medications, even from kiddos, that just would startle you. You'd say, "No, that can't be happening. What are they doing? Well, this kid he can't control himself. Therefore, let's get him on something that'll calm him down." And so we'd have no idea what's going to happen 5 years down the road with this kid. What's going to happen for these drugs in his body, you know, and it's just on and on and go. So anyway, let me get back to our text here. And so I'm just saying that God says, "Hey, I want to give you a supernatural peace. It's not something man can provide." And it's not something that I even think that the medical personnel can provide. Now, there's physical ailments, and I understand that, need to take care of that. But, you know, when there's no test to decipher what's going on in the head, that's something. Anyway, so we'll go to verse number 8. It'll be our key here tonight. Finally, brethren, whatsoever things are true and honest and just and so forth, think on these things. And so God says, I want you to understand that your anxiety and on the other side, your peace has a lot to do with how you think, how you're considering truth. How are you going through it? And even secular people that do not include God say, you know, how you think, how you look at life, how you deal with life is a key ingredient in a calmness in your spirit. And how much more should Christians have that calmness that God says is here? And so we've known for years that people whose minds are filled with worries and fears and dreads and frets and all those kind of things has major physical problems. And so not only that, but other problems as well. And so Proverbs 23:7 says, As a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. And so we need to think of what is in our heart. What are we thinking about? Because that'll produce what we do and what we are. And so the way we think, how we reason through trouble, and can help us with our peace. So three features from this text, and I'm only going to give one tonight because there's something I want to study out a little more, and I wouldn't have time anyway. So, and then the qualities for your thinking, okay? So the Holy Spirit had Paul here write in the beginning of this, six elements here, and he says, whatsoever things are. So it's a very broad spectrum. Whatsoever things fit within this category. So he does narrow it down some, but he says, here is the things that should fill your mind. And so in thinking about that, there are times, we understand, you don't have time to think about what you're thinking. We say, you don't have time to think about what you're thinking. You just think, do. And there's nothing wrong with that. And I don't think God's saying, okay, every time you do something and you put thoughts in your mind, I want you to stop a moment. But I think this is the concept here. Is number one is take time to stop and check on occasion how you're thinking just about life. And that's especially true if you're struggling with fears and anxieties and dreads and all that kind of thing. You know, when your body's idle and your mind's in gear, what fills that? When there's nothing, you don't have to think about how to build something. You don't have to think about how to fix something. You don't have to think about how you're going about doing this thing or that thing. Your body's idle and your mind's just turning. It's just going. It's the kind of thing when you wake up in the middle of the night, what is churning in your mind? It's the time when you don't have the TV on, you don't have anything else on. Ladies, you need to understand this, though. If you ever ask your husband, what are you thinking? He says, nothing. He can be really doing that. Ladies, you ask your wife, she can't do that. That's I won't say it's an impossibility. But for the most part, ladies can't think of nothing. It's not how God wired you. But guys can. So just that's a little side note. But when you have those times where your mind's churning and you don't really have to think about anything, how do you view life? What's filling your mind? What's filling your heart? And there are some areas here. Here are some categories that your thinking needs to fit into to help maintain peace. And I think that's what he's saying. So overall, the way you look at life, the way you reason through, the way you plan to deal with it, here are some checkpoints. So let's just jump through. There's six of them initially, and then there's two more, which I think filter them even more. But think on what is true. So whatsoever things are true. So this is true to fact, things that are truth, things that are accurate. I've said truth before in the Bible has three. What's actual, what's factual, and what's faithual. Now faithual means that you look at Bible truth and you believe what it says even though you can't see it. So those three things have to do with truth. And so I don't know if there's any particular order in these six things that are here, but if there was an order, then I think truth would have to be, or what those things that are true have to be at the top. Because if you don't understand what's true, then I don't think it's going to help you in any of the areas of that are mentioned here. Disconcerting truth. I remember knowing a young individual who got involved in looking at the internet for the latest, conspiracy theories, and then mixed them with Bible verses and Bible prophecy, and this individual came to the place that they didn't want anything to do with any barcodes, because that would be the mark of the beast. And so he lost a job, because that's what he looked at when he talked about, mail and that kind of stuff and all the barcodes that are on there. And so I just think if he would have stopped and paused and thought of truth overall, of course, I don't know if he would have seen it. No, this is truth. But the fact is that he messed his life up. He lost his testimony in some ways and his usefulness to the Lord. And so if we would stop and say, whatsoever things are true, and let that be the guiding thought of your life, it would calm your spirit in a lot of ways. Some other practical things not related to Bible prophecy at all. But how many times fears and anxieties crop up, they grow, because you've got the future figured out and you know it's not good. And so you're worried about tomorrow. You're worried about when you're going to the dentist. The other day I was looking through something. I made a payment and somehow the payment didn't go through. And I was just sitting there and thinking about it and said, And then I realized I couldn't call them on Saturday. And then I found out I could have called them, but I didn't call them. And I'm thinking, okay, now I got to call them tomorrow. And then I could tell myself I was just heating up and I was getting worried about it. And I got to take care of this and I don't want to take care of it, but I have to, and all this kind of stuff. And so I just said, Lord, I have a bad response here. Would you help me? Help me just to realize you'll take care of it. It's not a problem. And it was about an hour later, I finally got, but I know the Lord gave it. And so there are times that we worry about the future and what's going to happen. And we need to stop and say, you know what? God's got control of the future. And we are not the one in control. And yet we can trust one who is in control. Thinking of that, how about, have any of you ever made a decision based on someone else, based on what someone else told you about that someone else, and so you approach that person, this individual, based on what someone else said about them, and when you've met them, you said, well, that's not true. Anybody ever have that situation? Okay. Whatsoever things are true, let that fill your mind. Gossip is not where slander is not how you find the truthfulness of things. So be careful. We could apply it to mental fantasies or virtual realities that are in computer stuff. Be careful. Nothing evil about diversion. But I know of people in situations where they have lived in their make-believe world and they don't know how to live in a real world. Whatsoever things are true, are they actual? Are they factual? And so thinking and living, I know of someone who shared with me that there was a time when they were so involved in gaming that their family did not matter. Did not matter what was happening in their lives, because all that mattered was this make-believe world that they were living in. And folks, it's not an uncommon thing, though hopefully none of us. So God says, I want you to fill your mind with true, whatsoever things are true. And ultimately that would come back to the Bible. Okay, you got to be in the Scripture. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about your time that you spend here. And I would say even further, and I know I've heard me emphasize this, you've got to read through your Bible and got to keep reading, but you've got to take time to think about what it says. Meditate. Okay, as I have an evangelist friend of mine, he likened it to the cow and the stomachs and bring it up and so forth. Some of you have heard that. I'm not going to go into that, but he I never forgot his message because he talked about meditate. Meditate. That's how he did. Some of you know the cow's got several stomachs and they eat it down. They bring it up, chew it again, chew their cud. And so he says, man, you need to put that, fill your mind. So fill your mind with God's truth. And be careful about basing life on things that are not true. Okay, so whatsoever things are true, put that in there. I think a lot of times that can help us calm things down. Second of all, whatever things are honest, or I put what think on what is noble. The concept there is noble or honorable, worthy, honest. Okay, it's the opposite, obviously, of lying and deceit. But I think there's something here. He says, I want your mind to rise above the vulgarness and the dishonorable things of this world. It's not that you never know what's there, but the fact is, I want you to rise above that. How much of our media and entertainment industry is based on the debased and the vulgar and the dishonorable? Media, entertainment, put your mind on that which is vulgar. Put your mind on that which is dishonorable. It's almost comical, but it's not, and I'm not going to mention the name, but I heard something, I think it was just this week. The Iranian government came out and accused a well-known American entertainment of working to destroy young devout Muslims. And how were they doing it? Is because this individual was posting her own selfies on Instagram and had 3 million followers, and apparently some of those followers were in Iran, and so they were saying you're corrupting some young minds away from their devotion to God, the Allah, in their thing. And I thought, well, that's not. But those, you know, that whole thing there. And I thought, how many Christians of this woman's 3 million followers don't even see that? They look at the pictures and they're debased and so forth, and yet they would not see that somehow that's influencing their life away from Christ. Whatsoever things are noble. So be careful that the world not set the agenda for your mind. God does want us to deal with sin, and I've at times, you know, I've told people this with this whole bathroom bill and the marriage thing of same-sex unions and all that kind of stuff. What it's caused is for the Christian, we have to deal with some things that you don't even want to talk about. And you don't want to keep the contemplation there. So go over to Ephesians, just a little balance here. Go to Ephesians, just back a little bit. Ephesians 5. And so I think it sometimes in dealing with our culture biblically, we've got to mention some things, but don't chase them down in your mind and heart. And so there's a balance here, Ephesians 5, verse 11 and 12. It says, "And having no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather reprove them." And so we are to not bring ourselves in close companionship with that which is evil. But it says, reprove them, correct them, point them out, let them know they're evil. And then it says in the next verse, "For it is a shame even to speak of those things which are done of them in secret." So think, okay, if I'm going to reprove it, I've got to speak somehow about it, and yet God says in the next verse, don't speak about it, because it's a shame. And I think the balance there is the concept of speak there, is that you keep talking about it, and so the implication to me is you're talking about it, but not in a reproving manner. It becomes part of your conversation. It becomes part of the conversation you don't mind talking about. And so God says, that's the point that we're having trouble, is that you almost are not showing disfavor to it. So be careful. Instead, God says, whatsoever things are honest, noble, honorable, think on these things. So decide to fill your mind with that which is noble and honorable. The third thing here is think on what is righteous. It says whatsoever things are just. So that's right, appropriate, just means justice, all those kind of things. And so ultimately, the basic meaning of that is to follow a standard or to meet a standard. And our country today is having a hard time determining what is right and wrong. We know that from some things there. And so I think God says, let the standard of what is just, let the standard of what is right, let that be the guiding for your mind and your heart and your directions in life. Let that be the truth that would direct your life. Go back to Isaiah, because Isaiah had some trouble in his day. Isaiah chapter 5. They were having a hard time discerning what was right and wrong. In fact, before the first few chapters seemed to be a sort of a summary of some of his ministry that would be coming up later and why he had to have a ministry. And so you come to chapter 5, verse 18, and just notice some of the woes, you could say the curse upon the people for some of the things they were doing. So Isaiah 5, verse 18, "Woe unto them that draw iniquity with cords of vanity, and sin as it were with a cart rope, that say, let him," speaking of God here, "let God make speed and hasten his work, that we may see it. And let the counsel of the Holy One of Israel draw nigh and come, that we may know it." And so I think verse 18 could be two things. One, where it says they're pulling along their sin in some way. Either it could be that they were transporting idols from one place to another. But I think probably more, it's like their sin, they're dragging it along, and they got this giant rope that's not easily cut. It's not like a thread or a piece of yarn. It's something that's thick and heavy. And God's saying, you know what? You're bringing your sin with you everywhere, and you don't want to be cut. And maybe you can't cut it. Maybe it's captivating you. And you get to the place that you're saying things like this. Okay, let God deal with us if he's real. Let God's Holy One, let the Holy One, let him come near and so we can know it. If he's such a big and important God. And so there was that hardness of heart. So you come to verse 20. Woe unto them that call evil good and good evil, that put darkness for light and light for darkness, that put bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter. And so God's there as they challenge this God, and God may not judge immediately. But God says, you know, still woe on you, cursed is you, because you can't discern between right and wrong. You can't discern between these things. He continues on in verse number 21. Woe unto them that are wise in their own eyes and prudent in their own sight. And often that's why people can't discern between good and evil. Because they're trusting themselves that, hey, I know this. Isn't that... How many can just, as you see that, how many can see our present society just, I mean, like it's right there. How many can see that just right now from those two things? I mean, it's like clear as a bell. You know, the pride in there, verse 21, and then verse 20, just the inability to discern. You come to 22. Woe unto them that are mighty to drink wine, and men of strength to mingle strong drink, which justify the wicked for reward and take away the righteousness of the righteous from him. Therefore, as the fire devoureth the stubble and the flame consumeth the chaff, so their root shall be as rottenness and their blossom shall be as dust, because they have cast away the law of the Lord of hosts and despised the word of the Holy One of Israel. And so probably the drinking there in verse 22 is what causes them to do what they do in verse 23. So these are people that somehow have authority to judge. Somehow, and so they're taking bribes to justify the wicked. They somehow, they're not defending the cause of that which is right. And so they're doing all those things, and drinking is part of that. And God says in verse 24, I'm going to deal with you. One day I'll deal with you. And the concept there is the chaff, the root shall be as rottenness. Their blossom shall be as dust. There's nothing left. And that's what God eventually did with Israel. Verse 25 brings it all together for all the people. Therefore is the anger of the Lord kindled against his people, and he has stretched forth his hand against them and hath smitten them, and the hills did tremble, and their carcasses were torn in the midst of the streets. For all this, his anger is not turned away, but his hand is stretched out still. There was more to come. So God says, hey, I don't want you to be thinking like the unsaved. I don't want you to be looking at life in such a way as you can't discern what's right and wrong. Get into the Word. Get into my truth. Seek my face, so whatsoever things are true, think on these things. Again, it's not that you don't think on other things at all. Okay, not every one of our thoughts will probably always be thinking back on that Philippians 4 passage in verse number 8. But here are the qualities that ought to give us how we understand things, how we look at things, and we have to stop and consider them. Let me ask you, I don't want to think bad things, but here, just for a moment, okay? The last time that you had something you had to confess to God, where did that start? Probably in rotten thinking, not always, but most of the time we've been thinking some way that's wrong thoughts, and so we act on something, or we say something we ought not to say. And so as I was thinking about that, if we take these first three things here, true, honest, and just, okay? So that which is true, that which is honest or noble, and that which is just or right. And think about it, if we, when we maybe, this thing that we did, if we had stepped back a moment and thought about, is this something that's true? Am I basing what I'm about to do or about to say, is it based on truth? This thing I'm about, is it a noble thing? Is it a right thing? Is it true? Is it honorable? Is it right? How many family arguments would not happen if we just asked those three questions? How many spousal disagreements? How many workforce or societal disruptions? If we just ask, is this true? Is this honorable? Is this right? boy, so much would just stop. So decide to fill your mind with that which aligns with God's standard of right, that which is just. Number four there, think on what is pure. Whatsoever things are pure, stainless, innocent, things that are undefiled. I don't think I have to go there, but the immoral, the indecent in our society is everywhere. Don't let your mind get settled on those kind of things. Internet filth is everywhere, not only on the internet. Let me say this. Internet filth and the residual thoughts, what you have seen, sometimes continue to defile the mind far past the time of that visual. And we have to be very careful. And so we have to make sure we don't make allowances for that pornographic material. And let me say this. It affects you even when you don't think it does. Jesus still said it this way, but I say unto you that whosoever looketh on a woman to lust after her hath committed adultery with her already in his heart. I still remember this guy. He was a relative of a man in our church in Wenatchee. Going over to see him, and I think his dad was with me at the time. And we went in there, and his computer, just on the screen, the screensaver, whatever it was pornographic pictures. And so we're sitting on the couch and the computer is over there, and all of a sudden it starts running through, and I said, can we change that? It was, you know, this, let's not do that. And he said, oh yeah, well, those, they don't bother me. I mean, he could have, and I know he probably would have if he'd known this verse well enough. He says, well, whatsoever things are lovely. Doesn't that fit? Can I have that up there? Yeah, well, it's got to be pure. And so just be careful. There is so much, the thinking, so it comes back to being just, know what's right and wrong. But let me just say, this is a positive injunction. You know, a pure pathway. You know, focus on that sometimes. We just need to. The good and the godly, the innocent, the spotless. I was talking to someone the other day. Don't you just love it when kids, you know, anywhere from like 3 to 10, and it can happen up years. But there's just this, if you hear them giggle and laugh and you see their face and there's just pure innocence. Man, that's one of those one things just think about. And what's neat is when you see it in a 13-year-old or a 15-year-old or a 21-year-old and they still have that purity in their eyes. There's something special about it. And that's what we want for every child. Let's just make sure we stay pure and clean and right. Titus 1:15 makes an interesting statement. Unto the pure, all things are pure. But unto them that are defiled and unbelieving is nothing pure. But even their mind and their conscience is defiled. God can clean up a defiled mind. But sometimes it takes time. And all I'm saying is God says, I want you to think on what is pure. Put that as one of the categories that I wanted to focus on. And so decide that you're going to keep your mind on that which is innocent and undefiling. Be discerning about evil. Number five, think on what is lovely. That means what's attractive, what is agreeable, what is even beautiful and pleasing. And so there's a sense in which think on those things that make you smile, that make you glad. God giveth us all things richly to enjoy, 1 Timothy chapter 6. It could be a setting or a situation. It could be a person. It could be an event. It could be a time in the past. It could be anticipation of the future. Now, the problem about anticipating the future, and every child knows this, and even adult knows this, that when that doesn't happen, if you're anticipating something that's going to be joyous and it doesn't happen, what does it do? So sometimes it can discourage you and make you sad and lonely and all those kind of things and anxious and such. So be careful about that. But I think there is an aspect there to think upon that which is beautiful. Let me ask you this. Don't answer me because I get a bunch of answers. Is beauty in the eyes of the beholder only? In other words, is beauty subjective always? Is there any objective beauty? Yeah, I think so. I wasn't going to talk about this, but I still remember a long time ago, probably in high school, maybe I was in college. I saw one of those news shows. I don't remember what one it was, but they talked about And they had pictures of people that were supposedly beautiful. You know, it usually was entertainment industry. And so what they did, they had a mathematician come in there, and they found out those people that were supposedly beautiful, and they were attractive in that sense, their faces, they said their faces were perfectly set up. You know, you could divide it in half, and the left and the right both agreed and were in symmetry together. And they said there were certain lengths and depths between their eyes and their nose and all that kind of stuff. And they said that's what made them beautiful. So understand, if someone's beautiful, it's all mathematical expression. That's all it is. Okay, it's not anything else. Just anything else. I don't know why I talked about it. Oh, I know what it was, because beauty in the eye of the beholder. There is an aspect to that. But let me ask you this. If someone's talented in artistry, and I'll just talk about that, whether painting or sculpturing or whatever, did they ever go to school to learn more? Most of the time. That's why when we got ready to do the floors and the bathrooms, no one asked me to coordinate the colors. It's all in the eyes of the beholder, isn't it? Beauty. And so there's aspects of, I just wrote down, sometimes someone will go to school as an artist type, color, contrast, shadows, texture, all that kind of stuff. Because some things just don't go together. My wife, I still ask her, does this go with that? And if she pauses, I know that's not going to work. Because she's trying to figure out, well, you may, yeah, okay, I'll go get something else on. You ever thought, I read an article just recently about the colors in nature and the blue sky. And I found out, well, what the blue sky, it has to do with light hitting the ice crystals, and the refraction is how it turns blue. But the blue sky, and for the prominent part, the green in land, that says those are comforting colors, that God had a purpose in that long ago. And they talked about the brilliance of flowers and how that they set, they're usually in the background of green when they're in that kind of thing, and there's a reason for that. It brings a contrast out that's vivid. God is one who deals with beauty. And so you know, there's lots of things we could talk about there. You could talk about the work of God, and that's beautiful. Talk about a soul getting saved, and that's beautiful. And there's lots of things along that line that we can see as beauty that we ought to think about. And I thought there are times, I think, the diversion of that which is pleasing to us. Think on these things. There are times where we just, as I said earlier, diversion, getting away from the stress of life and figure out that which is beautiful to you. And look forward to that thing. But even as you look forward to that thing, understand, just like someone I was recently talking to, you know, if you change places, if you change your surroundings, that's not going to fix all of your dilemmas unless, first of all, your heart gets fixed. And sometimes we're always looking for that which pleases us. And we're looking for that which somehow give us this, not a drug high, but giving us that lift. And we're always looking for that, and we fail to see that the biggest lift is my relationship with God. And you can keep changing all these things out here, and that's what the world, it's still looking for that which is pleasing, that which is pleasurable, that which will somehow get me above life. And I never stop to realize my relationship with God is the key to all of that. And so I would say one other thing just about those things that you enjoy. I don't have a problem with any of that, taking time to enjoy the lovely things. But you know, when you have a chance to enjoy it, enjoy it. Think about how many times you've been anxious about something out there, and so you've never been able to really enjoy what's here, what you think I should be able to enjoy, but I can't enjoy it because your mind's back here, because you've never been able to give it to God, and so your mind's still over there, and you can't enjoy the present with those people you love, the situation you love. So all I'm saying is allow God to take away the burden. Do Philippians 4, 6, and 7, be careful for nothing, but in prayer and supplication and so forth, so that God can take away that burden, so that when you get into those things and you're at the moment of that pleasing thing, that thing which you consider lovely, let it be lovely. Let it encourage your soul, because you're you're involved with that very thing, that very moment, that very time. And so think on those things. Let those fill your mind. Fill your mind with that which is righteously enjoyable. And I think it'll lighten your life. And last of all, think on that which is of good report, that which is admirable, that which is well spoken of, that which is of good reputation. There's a lot of different ways you could look at that. I'm going to focus in just one, and we'll close after that. Think the best of people. Why is it we think the worst of everyone?
Well, someone may be against me.
How do you know that? I could tell. How could you tell? Well, they looked at me funny. How did they look at you funny? I don't know. They smiled. What? I'm being bizarre, but that's how people are. We think about everybody is like this. And most of the time, if you are suspicious of everybody, it's because somehow you have a bad attitude toward everybody. And some of you think, well, everyone thinks the same way I do. I mean, that's how we do think, is we think everyone must think the way I think. And so I'm just saying, if you think everyone's against you, just be careful. I'm not saying be gullible toward evil, but don't live your life suspicious of everyone. I know a number of men who, and this was a number of years ago, where they were hurt in a church. I mean, they were. It was some sad situations. And from that point on, they would never join a church and they would never trust anyone because they were hurt. They were not doing what this verse, think on that which is of good report. There are people you can still trust. And if you cannot trust people, you're going to live a miserable life of self-sufficiency, which doesn't get very far. You say, well, I'm trusting God. Well, God says, okay, you trust God, then trust the people around you. There's something you can trust. And so it says in 1 Corinthians 13:5, it says that love thinketh no evil. It's not quick to reckon evil deeds and evil thoughts and evil concepts of other people. And so as I'm saying, just be careful to what you fill your mind with about others, whether it's your spouse, whether it's family, whether it's church members. Just be careful. So fill it with that which is good. And I'm not saying be gullible. I'm not saying let people run over you. I'm not saying let evil have its way. But what I'm saying is don't be quick to judge everybody. Don't be quick. Let your mind be filled with that which is of good report. So decide to think well of others as best you can. And now I know there are some people that are hard to do that with, but so I'll close here. Hey, you know, as a man, a woman thinketh in his heart, so is he. And so God says, here are some qualities that I want you to consider. And I want you to allow these things to be deciding factors in how you go about your life, because that's what you're filling your mind with. So may the Lord make us like the Lord Jesus Christ and help us maintain that peace that passeth understanding by filling our minds with the right stuff. Let's pray. Father, thank you for this evening. Thank you for your truth. Lord, we pray that you'd help us to take consideration at times about how we are looking at life, how we are thinking about things. And Father, especially as we get in those times, and we all have those times, where we're very anxious and we're fearful and feel like things are closing in around us, help us to take those times and examine how we're looking at life, how we're thinking about the things around us. And then, Lord, help us to come back to this passage and see if we're allowing the right categories to and qualities to direct how we think.